This is cassette two of the interview with former Governor James Holzhauser Jr. This is cassette 11.10.95-JH.2.
How do you remember all that?
It's just the date and your initials. It's actually
okay.
Easy.
Okay.
We were talking about your sense of the impact of redistricting, for example, on...
Right, and I was saying that in 72, I had told blacks that I talked with that whether I got 5% or 15% of the black vote or 20%, turned out it was about 13, I think, that what I was going to try to do if I was elected was to see that there were enough women, enough blacks, Indians, who were in visible positions of one kind or another in state government, so that everybody who was out there around the state, no matter what part of the community they came from, could see somebody in Raleigh that looked like them. Not that it might change how the decisions got made or anything else, but it would just have people feel like that indirectly, at least, there was some input coming there somewhere. And I think that's a healthy thing for democracy. Even if my friend that I know may be in there may not agree with me philosophically on things, the fact that I know him makes me feel like the process has got a better chance of working. Where women are concerned, I don't think that's had much to do with laws. It's had more to do with culture changes and the fact that the feminist movement, I think, while it didn't get ERA passed, clearly has stirred a lot of women to become more involved than they had been. I remember very clearly speaking to a group of Republican women at a convention they had, somewhere around 1980 or so, and saying how much I appreciated all of them who had worked in the boiler rooms and had handed out literature and had licked the stamps. And several of them came up after me and said, "We ain't doing that anymore. We're running." And I made myself a mental note. I got quit saying it that way. And I think that process has been good, too, because clearly women bring a just totally different perspective in a lot of instances, not on every issue, but on a lot of issues. And there's a voice there to stand up and make you have a second thought about something that if that voice hadn't been there, you'd have never had the second thought. And, women are just like men. They're good ones and bad ones, and flaky ones and smart ones. But because they're in a minority in the process, those that are good and those that are bad tend to stick out and get noticed. So I think women and blacks are like Republicans were in the 60s and early 70s, that because we're so few, we have to do our very best and work a lot harder.
Mm-hmm. Last question, and then I'll want you to raise any other things that we haven't talked about. How significant has, in your view, electronic media and its use in contemporary political campaigns been in driving the political shifts that we've seen in the last 10, 15 years?
It's been a watershed shift from old-style campaigning, most of which was the kind I did. And some candidates have had extreme difficulty adjusting. I don't think there's going to be a significant change in it in the immediate future, but it'll be interesting to see. Right now, candidates, incumbents, and challengers tend to do more of what John East was doing. And John East had a very pragmatic reason for doing that. He was in a wheelchair all the time, and it made mobility a lot more difficult than it was for most candidates. But the average candidate right now spends, particularly in the early months, 75 to 80% of his time trying to raise money. And even during the heat of the campaign, 50% of it's probably raising money. I remember just being appalled when Reuben Askew of Florida, who I thought was one of the better governors, just pulled out of a race for the U.S. Senate in Florida when he was well ahead in the primary, in the polls, He just said he wasn't going to keep being on the phone 6 hours a day calling people, asking them for money. But that has become the communications method of choice and maybe of necessity in campaigns. If you're trying to reach 300 people, you can do it shaking hands one day at a time. If you're trying to reach 6 million, it's getting extremely hard to try to do it that way. And even if you're the best candidate that ever was, even if you're the most honest guy, and even if everybody agrees with what you say on everything, by the time an attack campaign goes on for about 6 weeks, the public may be convinced you're just the villain of the world. They may have just about proved it by that time. So it's a very unhealthy thing. At the same time, I don't have a better alternative. I don't think constitutionally you can knock down freedom of speech that says that a candidate can't get on the tube and the radio and in the papers and whatever. I personally have a belief that every candidate has the capacity to bring out the worst or the best in people during the campaign itself. And I think you ought to try to bring out the best that you can. Doesn't mean you ought to not talk about your opponent's record. People are entitled to know if he's got things that they might disagree with. But I also think that doing campaigns the way we're doing them now means that the candidate himself, or the office holder, maybe even more importantly, who's running for re-election, doesn't really get a chance to get out and listen to people. They get all their information about what the public thinks are polls, through polls, and depending on how the questions are asked and what are the events of that particular day, you may come back with a skewed thing, but nothing gets it in your head quite like listening to people tell it to you on the street. And after you've had 36 people tell you the same thing in so many words or one way or the other over a period of a month, you start to get a feel of what's really out there, and it's better than what polls can show.
Can I cheat and ask one last final question? One further.
That's fine.
Question. And I promise this is the last. Let me ask a sort of what-if question. Let's say you decided for some reason to challenge Helms in the 78th Senate race and had won that seat and had gone on to... You mentioned earlier in our conversation that politics here in North Carolina might have been quite a bit different had Jesse Helms not emerged to be the significant figure that he was. If you'd been shaping the state Republican Party over the last 20 years or so, would it be any different than it is today? Would you want it to be any different than it is today?
Well, let's start, first of all, with the first part of the question. One of the best decisions I made early on in Raleigh was to tell the press corps that I wasn't going to answer a question that started with if, because a lot of them never came to pass. Saved me just lots of pain over 4 years, and so I'll probably pass on that, because it didn't happen. While I have not been on the front line during the last 20 years in every case, I have been very much involved as chairman or honorary chairman or something in most of the statewide races. I don't go to central committee meetings, but I know the chairman, talk to him a lot, and I think the shaping of the party hadn't been that much different than if I had been chairman. For that period of time, having helped the state and the party. Parties are molded as much by events as by people, maybe a lot more so in times. And I think a lot of that is what's happened in recent years. Right now, that libertarian thread that's running through a fair number of Republican office holders probably has to run a course, but I don't believe the American people are really libertarians at heart in significant enough numbers for that to be a permanent mode. And so I think we're going to see some blip on the graph about that. But the general posture of the parties is still going to be the same. The Democrats, by and large, are going to be more liberal than the general Republicans. And both parties are going to have people within their umbrella that they're going to feel a little uncomfortable with, but that the voter still has a choice. The voter doesn't see that choice as clearly as they did at one time, and that's part of some of the dissatisfaction in the effort toward third parties. One of the things that the PACs and fundraising efforts have done in recent years is that because of the ability of incumbents to raise money from the PACs, they start off with such a significant advantage that you find people giving to incumbents, whether they agree with them or not, because they think incumbents are going to get reelected, whether they be Democrats or Republicans. That's going to help Republicans in the immediate future in terms of raising money as compared with the past, since we're in control of the Congress for the first time in 40 years. But I do believe that the reason I became a Republican to start with was a belief in balanced budgets, fiscal responsibility, strong defense, and some fairness issues in state level in particular. And a lot of those are still right in the middle of Republican efforts today. I don't agree with all those that are being done, never have, never will. You won't find many Republicans that agree with everything, or Democrats who agree with everything. But I think the core is there, and I'm not a supply-side economist, not economist at all, but I'm sort more toward traditional monetarist and Milton Friedman type money feelings. So I'm glad to see what's happening right now in the Congress to try to slow down the deficit. I'm frankly sort of appalled that we've reached the point that the highest goal is to get the deficit to zero, not even discussing the national debt. And so I hope that something good will come out of that.
Anything that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to take a minute or two, or as much time as you like, and add to what we've spoken about?
Well, I guess maybe the only thing is that it's awfully easy when you've been involved in politics for 30 years to sort of feel like at times the world's going to hell in a handbasket. At the same time, I'm tremendously encouraged by the number of young people I see who are interested in getting involved in either party. And there's still an optimism out there among young people that they can make it a better world. And as long as I feel pretty good about the future.
Governor, thank you so much. Okay. Appreciate all this time. Thank you.
Good enough.